Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to my first of many interviews I'll be conducting with different land professionals from around the nation. I encourage you to return to each new broadcast so you can continue to grow your knowledge about land. This broadcast is the only place on the internet where you will experience the very best insights about the depth and breadth of vacant land. I'm Russell Ward, your host, and I'm a full-time land investor and author of Vacant Land Guide, How to Buy Vacant Land at Wholesale Prices. My turnkey program teaches you the secrets of owning your own land business where you don't have to use your own money, and my process is very easy to learn. So if you have any questions or comments during this broadcast, you can contact me through my website at www.vacantlandguide.com. All right, so tonight I've invited Mark Skillman, a land investor and developer from Southern Oregon, on the broadcast. And so, Mark, are you there? Thanks for joining me.
I'm here. How are you doing, Russell?
Okay, I'm doing great. I'm so excited to have you so we can talk a little about what you do. So I told Mark I'm going to introduce him first so that our listeners can get acquainted with Mark. And Mark has been involved in rural real estate for the past 21 years in a variety of capacities. Now, he's only 39, so for 21 years, that's pretty kicking. I'm just kidding. And as a real estate broker and investor, he's been a developer, and he specializes in forest, farm, and private home site development. His land resume includes being co-founder, owner, and manager of a rural real estate brokerage firm in Medford, Oregon, and later establishing a real estate company dedicated solely to rural land development. He currently works as a land sales manager for West Slope, that's West S-L-O-P-E, Properties, a national rural land sales organization. So it's safe to say that Mark knows land, and his involvement in land has comfortably supported him and his family of four children for over two decades. So, Mr. Skillman, I just love to talk with fellow land investors, as there just aren't many of us. So my first question is one that is often asked of me: of all the different types of real estate, why did you choose land?
Well, first of all, let me say that that intro sounded more like an obituary than an introduction. But
you can do anything.
I hope I have a few good years in front of me in the land business, because I'm very excited about it.
I understand.
Yeah, but as far as my roots go, I practice real estate in the same town that I grew up in. And when I was growing up, my uncle had been very successful in the land development business himself. Now, when I say that, don't automatically think that somehow I had some connection or advantage or shoe-in into the business, because I really didn't. He was gone out of it before I got into it, so there was really no connection between the two of us.
Okay.
But I did have the privilege and the opportunity to observe somebody else who had been in it for a long time and been very successful at it.
Sure.
And I guess that was sort of my impetus to stay in the town that I grew up in and get involved in a business that I knew could be productive and profitable.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in a nutshell, that's it. Uh-huh.
And like many of you, you grew up there, went off to college, and then returned.
That's right. Yeah, I grew up. I went after graduating from high school, I went off to lived in Japan for a couple of years, and then when I got back, I completed my 4-year degree, and I decided that, you know, after having traveled all over the world, I really liked where I was from.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a conscious decision for me to when I graduated from college, to move back to my hometown.
Excellent.
And I have no regrets. I still love it here to this date.
Excellent. Well, I know that talking with the few land investors that I know of, because sometimes I feel like there were few and far between, that's oftentimes it's been something that's been handed down from from one family member to another. So your uncle gave you some exposure, and that kind of led you down that path, gave you that open door, so to speak, to kind of walk through and pursue that idea, right?
Yes, but not financially. You know, don't
right,
he did
right.
not he did not give me any financial benefit. He just gave me an example,
exactly.
somebody who I could watch and follow and
Perfect.
Learn from, and that's it. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I understand.
Right.
I understand. Now, let's give our listeners just a perspective on how many land deals over the last 20 years have you been a part of? Has it just been a handful? Has it been hundreds? Or
well, I sort of did a quick and dirty calculation on it, and mm-hmm. I have at the least tried to always maintain one land transaction per month for
okay.
the last past 21 years. So I would say that I'm pretty safe ground to say that I have successfully been involved in, say, 250 land transactions
wow.
over the course of my career. Uh-huh.
Very nice. Very nice. And most of those have been like 50 acres and more, or?
I would say most of those have been under 50 acres. Most of the stuff I'm involved in is probably your 5 to 10 acre variety. I have some experience on the underside of that in a 1 to 2 acre variety, but I also have some experience on the high end of that too, with
sure.
you know 640 acres and above. So,
sure.
But I'd say mainstream would probably be your 5 to 10 acre parcel.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, right. And the reason I'm having Mark for our audience, why I've asked Mark to come on is that he has developed a very successful expertise in developing properties. He can look at a property, have some imagination with it, look it over, and then really have a good perspective on what to do with that particular property. And so, in fact, that's one of the key questions I've asked Mark to kind of talk a little bit about, is that so many people are intrigued about going out and doing land deals, but how do you figure out if something's a good deal or not?
Well, when you say land developer, most people conjure an image of, you know, somebody living in a city and doing subdivision work, you know, splitting up tracts of land into smaller tracts. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, by my definition, a land developer is anybody who takes a piece of property and improves upon it or
okay.
enhances its value. And so I guess in that respect, I would consider myself a land developer, but certainly not in the respect of somebody who does subdivision work. That's
sure.
not to say I haven't done. I actually have done a few subdivisions, but
mm-hmm.
That's not my primary focus in my career. But to answer your question, though, I feel that I have recognized the greatest reward in finding raw vacant pieces of property, and then make an intelligent evaluation of what the market demand would be in that area for this property if it were improved, and then
mm-hmm.
capitalizing on those points and seeing them through.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, because some of the people that are listening may not understand, you use the word improved. What would
mm-hmm.
improved mean when it comes to land?
Well, again, we're down to a matter of semantics here, but you know, I always consider the two value added investments you can make in a property are entitlements and improvements. And
okay.
I believe that an entitlement is taking a piece of property through the government process to get in our area, in order to get a home site on a piece of property, that's an actual administrative action you have to go through with the county a planning department to get that, or a septic approval is the same thing.
Okay.
Those are entitlement issues.
All
and
right.
then improvement issues are actual capital expenditures you put on the ground, like driveways, home pads, wells, septics, fences, stuff like that.
Okay.
Those are improvements. Uh-huh.
Now, in some cases, you have to get the original piece was like zoned in Florida, it would be labeled as agricultural, and maybe we wanted to be rezoned to rural residential. Do you have to go through a rezoning process sometimes with these properties?
Absolutely. It's not easy to do in our neck of the woods. Oregon is notorious for having very conservative land use planning regulations, and zone changes are difficult to do. I try to avoid engaging in one if at all possible. I try to find properties that are already zoned for the for the purpose to which I want to, you know, place it.
Okay.
But yeah, zone changes are definitely something that, you know, it would be a usual course of a business, I think, in the land business, particularly
mm-hmm.
in other areas.
Mm-hmm. Would that be under the category of entitlements or improvements?
That's an entitlement.
Yeah, that is entitlement then, because
right.
that's a government process, as you said.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And in theory, by making, you know, by doing entitlement work, you are doing value-added enhancements to the property that create value.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if a piece of property is zoned, you know, for an agricultural use, it may be worth so much, but if you go through the entitlement process and change the zoning to a rural residential, then in theory, it would be worth more now, even though you've actually done nothing physical to the property.
Okay. Yeah. Very good.
And I do both. You know, I specialize in both. I think that there's a an opportunity to make a profit on both ends of that spectrum, both
mm-hmm.
in the entitlement work and in the improvement work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, say in the last 6 months, you see an opportunity. Typically, you would like to see whether it's a good value. You would drive out to it. You would maybe do some research through the local, call maybe the local accounting planning department. What kind of steps would you kind of take to finally, you know, finally arrive at an initial conclusion that might be a piece of property worth pursuing?
Well, you know, I firmly believe that there's no substitute for knowledge. A person really, if they're going to get involved in the land business, they have to really take it upon themselves to get educated in what, you know, what's driving the market and where the market demand is.
Sure.
And
okay.
I think that's your absolute first initial step, is to invest the time to get educated on your market, to learn, you know, what's, you know, who the players are, where the good areas are, and
mm-hmm.
and most importantly, what type of properties are buyers actively looking for at
mm-hmm.
any given point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you do that, then you can actually start the actual groundwork where you begin contacting sellers or drive out and look at properties or
mm-hmm.
Such as the like.
Mm-hmm. So you actually, before you look at the property, you might even start thinking about who would be the end user of that property then?
Absolutely. In fact, I'll know 90% of what a property is all about long before I ever go look at it. I'll know who the end user is going to be. I'll know approximately what my costs are going to be for entitlement work and improvement work on it, as well as where my acquisition cost should be.
Mm-hmm.
And all that comes from just good research.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Now, some of your research, a lot of that can actually be done free if you just know where those outlets are. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. There's a wealth of information out there that any inquiring person can obtain free of charge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best and the biggest and the most informative resource you can find is probably the local county planning department.
Okay.
A visit to the local planning department will put you in front of a land use planner that has a specialized knowledge in the zoning regulations and, you know, the nuances to that particular county.
Mm-hmm.
And they are paid to provide a free service to the public. And so if you can gain their audience and ask the right questions and, you know, be friendly and sincere with them in your inquiry, boy, they'll bend over backwards to help you out.
Sure.
Yeah.
I've personally had nothing but positive experiences with the local planning department officials. I've even had them drive out and meet me at properties before, which I thought was very gracious of them to do with their time. But that's what they're there. They're to be public servants, but they really know land, though, don't they?
They do. They know their business, and, you know, you talk about personal relationship. I, over many, many years, had such a positive personal relationship with our county planning department that I alone was able to go into the county planning department, walk behind the counter, go back to their files, and access files to any one of the properties in the county that I wanted to at my discretion,
mm-hmm.
just
mm-hmm.
because I had invested so much time in
mm-hmm.
developing a rapport with them. They mm-hmm. learned to trust me and to know that I do it right and serious about what I do. So.
Sure. And you are probably one of the few persons in your area that was actively coming in inquiring about vacant land, I would gather.
Yeah, there are a few other people around the valley who are land specialists too. But I, of course, naturally, I like to think that I'm the best one. But they probably think the same thing.
Uh-huh.
But I, you know, I'm a firm believer in investing heavily in relationships, you know, and maintaining those relationships over time with people. And when you do that, then you can gain their trust. And when you have somebody's trust, then they will really open up to you and make your job a lot easier.
Right, right. But Eve, I've been in situations where I live in one county and don't have a rapport with the county planning department in a neighboring county, and I will call them up, and I they were still very gracious to help me and volunteer information that was very useful about whether it was a buildable parcel and whether I needed – if I needed to rezone, what would I have to do to get that done? And they were very available. And I think the point we're trying to make with all that is that's a free resource person that is available. Right?
Yeah. Russell, my experience has been exactly the same. In dealing with other counties around the state where I'm not as familiar with the planning staff, without exception, they have been very easy to work with and affable, you know, to whatever my questions were.
Well, I think it's just it's an important point for someone that wants to get involved, whether they want to buy a piece of land for themselves they're doing some research on their own, or they want to become a land investor like you and I, that is going to be one of a key person to develop rapport with. It's not like you need to put them on your Christmas card list or anything like that, but, you know, certainly like you're saying, being gracious and trustworthy with them, they're certainly going to be very helpful to you in the long term. So
absolutely. I think that's a great first step.
Absolutely. Because I know that I get leads for properties in neighboring areas, and my first thought, I always tell someone, or if I'm going to pursue it myself, is I'm going to call that local office. Their phone number's on the Internet, if they're easy, and they're very accessible.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
So now, you've spent a lot of time evaluating properties, and we were talking earlier that you've kind of come up with, you use the word formula to kind of evaluate a property. What are some of those key components of that formula, so to speak?
Well, like I mentioned, there's no substitute for market awareness, and research, I think, is the key there. But so I, you know, the formula that I use though is, you know, any property that I buy, I buy it with my exit strategy already in place.
Okay. Key
in
point.
Other words,
right?
Yeah, I already know what that property is going to sell for when I'm done with it, and approximately how long it's going to take me to get to that point. And so, in order to begin with the end in mind, so to speak, I think that it's important that, you know, you understand, you know, the market dynamics, that you have a pretty good grasp. In fact, you need to have an excellent grasp of what your improvement costs are going to be.
Okay.
I've seen a lot of people buy a piece of property with a pipe dream of, you know, doing this or that to it, only to get into the project and realize that there was a lot more cost involved than they had ever anticipated or expected.
Sure.
And so, you know, you overcome some of that by experience and just doing some deals, but you can overcome a lot of it too by you know, talking to everybody who's going to be involved in the project and getting their input and opinion and the worst case scenarios, et cetera, like that.
Sure.
And I'm talking about like excavation contractors that build driveways and home pads. Talking about well drillers, I'm talking about septic installers.
Okay.
You know,
sure.
Those guys, you know, they'll be able to really steer you in the right direction right up front before you ever buy the property, of what, you know, what their fees are going to be.
Right.
And so, you know, that's the sort of stuff you need to focus on in controlling costs.
Mm-hmm.
And then most importantly is, you know, I really firmly believe you make your money in the buy. When you buy the property, you know, you've got to buy it right, because there can, you know, no matter how much good research and due diligence you do, there can always be something pop up that could wipe out your profit. In fact, cause you to lose money in a hurry. And
sure.
So I think that, you know, your first step would be to be sure you get the property right.
Okay.
And then just make sure you have your costs, your improvement costs and entitlement time. That's another big, in our county, that's another big detriment is the time it takes to do entitlement work. Sometimes it can take 6 months or more to go through the entitlement process.
And you really need to anticipate that.
Yeah, because if you buy a piece of property thinking you're going to turn around and resell it in a month or two and it takes you 6 to 8 months to actually go through the process, you'll be disappointed because you could miss your market window and you're going to incur a lot more carrying costs than you otherwise would have. So
absolutely. Right.
Those are some of the things.
And I think that's an important point, though, is that entitlement process, you know, the wheels grind slow when it comes to government.
Right.
And so you have to, if you know that ahead of time, you won't get frustrated.
You can account for it and calculate for it.
Yeah,
right.
And you can account for that. Yep.
Right. And what I try to do is I try to structure that timing into my transaction. In other words, I won't actually close it until that's all done.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you're not carrying interest and opportunity costs during the process.
Okay.
If the deal is sweet enough, then you can go ahead and close it. But, you know, it all depends.
Okay. Well, why don't you give us a deal that you've done in the last year where, you know, someone gave you the lead and it was, you know, 25 acres and you looked it over and you just said, aha, this looks great. And, you know, what were kind of some of the steps that you actually had to go through and the people you had to talk to? I mean, just give us a practical example, so to speak.
Okay, like a case study, so to speak.
Case study, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, for example, there's a piece of property that's on the north end of our valley, which is in a pretty attractive area for, you know, buyers coming in to the valley. And there was a 5-acre piece of property that I had contacted the seller about buying.
Okay.
And
how'd you get the lead?
The direct mail contact.
And, you did some direct mail, okay.
Oh, right. I do a lot of that, yeah.
Okay.
That's probably
great.
Another conversation, Russell, that I had to
sure,
get.
Sure, absolutely it is.
But so this is somebody that I'd contacted, and they got back in touch with me, and over the course of several conversations, we arrived at a mutually agreeable price. And I'll go ahead and tell you that, just so I can give your listeners some hard numbers,
mm-hmm.
that we had agreed upon a price of $50,000 to buy
this
piece of property.
Okay, $10,000 an acre.
$10,000 an acre.
Okay,
and then I made my offer contingent upon going through the entitlement work. And in the course of
meaning that you don't close on it.
Close the escrow on it until I have, you know, achieved the desired
entitlement. Okay.
Entitlements, right?
Okay, and what did you need to entitle on this property?
This property was already zoned for home site, so it did not require a home site application.
And
but
so what would be the term in your world? Is it like rural residential? What would be the
It was zoned
term?
Rural residential, right.
Okay,
so it already had the zoning for that. Uh-huh.
Okay. And you didn't
but
need to change that zoning, did you?
I did not need to change that.
Okay.
So that was and honestly, like I mentioned, you know, when we first started talking, is that I try to focus on properties that already have the zoning because it's too cumbersome to try to get zone changes in this county.
Yeah,
in this state, in fact.
Yeah, and Florida's the same. If it was agricultural and I wanted to change it to rural residential, that could be an arduous process in itself.
Right. So my initial contact to these people about buying the property was with my foreknowledge that it already had the correct zoning. So that was by design on my part.
Now, these owners, they live near the property, or do they live somewhere else?
These owners were out of state, somewhere in California.
Out of state. Okay.
I can't remember where.
And they've owned it for a while?
They've owned it for quite a while, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Mm-hmm. I'd say more than 20 years, probably.
Okay, all right. So they were hoping maybe to retire on it, and that's not materialized for them.
Absolutely. There's a lot of that sort of stuff going on around here. People, you know, live in a city. They come up here to Oregon. They see its beauty. They buy the property with the expectation or hope that someday retire, and then retirement time comes. The kids have moved on to Arizona or something, and they're like, we're going to follow our kids to Arizona. We're not going to Oregon. We want to
or
sell
they're
property.
In ill health or, they're going to go
right,
somewhere
or ill
else.
Health or
you know,
whatever.
It's hard to predict 20 to 30 years later what you're going to do
right.
with your life. Absolutely.
Right. Plans change. That's
absolutely.
For sure. Well, anyway, back to my case study. This this property, it did not have a septic approval. And, you know, without a septic approval on a piece of property, you cannot build a house because that's a, you know, sort of the first step. So I made my offer to buy it contingent upon obtaining a septic approval. we got into the process, and because of a thick vertical clay surface on the property, it did not qualify. It was actually denied a septic approval. So I promptly, according to the agreement of that we had made, I backed out of the transaction.
Okay. All right.
And went away. Well, shortly thereafter, they called me back and they said, well, we've been talking to some realtors and stuff around, and without a septic approval, that property is not worth much.
And it's right.
Yeah. So I said, right. So they said, but is there any price where you'd be willing to buy the property?
Okay.
And I said, well, I'm not sure what I can do with it. Maybe I can envelop it into an adjacent piece of property, or maybe I can go for a variance of the state, but it's a huge risk.
That's tricky stuff, though.
Tricky stuff,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but they offered it to me at a price of $15,000.
Okay.
So I said, well, for $15,000, I don't see how I can get hurt, because, heck, for the worst-case scenario, I could, I can use it for, hunting birds or something on it,
Okay, all right.
Or get cut firewood or whatever. So I felt at that price, it was impossible for me to get hurt. So I went ahead and closed the transaction.
All right.
And then that's when, my what I call my circle of influence actually came into play there. I called up people that I know in the business who specialize in septics. And I have an attorney friend who lives up in the northern part of the state, and he is an expert on septic regulations in the state of Oregon.
Okay.
So I hired him to come down and put together a variance application to the state of Oregon, because anytime the county denies something, the state has the opportunity to override that.
A variance application.
Right.
Meaning? What's that mean?
Meaning that the in most states, in fact, in all states, you have a right to disagree with a decision that any government entity makes. And
now
take
that's
it to
a challenging thing to do.
Right.
Challenge the government.
Challenge the government. But it's a right. It's your right as a citizen, right? And so that's what I did. I challenged the county's decision. But rather than do it, the hard way, I did it the easy way. I went to the county. I said, listen, I'm going to try to get a variance on this property. What do you think? What do you think would be the options out here? And then I got my attorney involved in it, and the three of us worked on getting a new idea in place. And
okay.
then we and so I brought the county back in. Okay, this is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
I brought the county back into the picture, and I gave them some ownership on it, even though they had denied me.
Mm-hmm.
Your natural reaction would be, okay, let's forget those people.
Right,
and
it's a done deal,
and you
right.
can write them hate mail or whatever,
right.
But I said,
right.
no, let's just step back and be logical with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to make a long story longer, we we went through the whole process, and guess what? I got the variance, right?
Wow.
I got it.
Wow.
And so as soon as I got it, I went ahead and put the septic system in. I went ahead and drilled my well. I went ahead and put my driveway system in, and then I put the whole thing together, and I sold that property off north of $200,000.
Wow.
In short order, yeah.
So, the bottom line with that, it was just some good old-fashioned persistence.
Good old-fashioned persistence.
It really was.
And patience, right.
And, well, you were patient, absolutely. Right. But you saw, because of your experience and background, when when you heard the no, that doesn't necessarily mean no.
No does not necessarily mean no.
And so you kind of backed up, you re-looked at things, you talked, like you said, with kind of your network, and you
right.
found a professional that maybe could word
things. Has specialized skills.
Yeah, has
right.
specialized skills. And could kind of help you
right.
Recreate that in such a way that could be a very profitable endeavor.
Right.
most investors, though, would have just,
they probably would have thrown in the towel.
It,
yeah.
And thrown in the towel. But
right.
I think that's what really makes someone a successful real estate investor in general, is that persistence.
Right.
And seeing something to the end to they really.
You got to stick through with it and turn
yeah.
over every stone, and
right.
look for opportunities.
And
now, that case too, don't get me wrong, not every single transaction that I'm involved in requires
mm-hmm.
that level of persistence and expertise.
Right.
There's been many, many deals
mm-hmm.
that I've happened upon that have been pretty easy to,
mm-hmm.
where I've just bought the property, gone in and done my my improvement and entitlement work on it and resold it for a handsome profit.
Sure.
So I think those opportunities are everywhere out there. I mean, they're all over the place. And I believe that there's people that take advantage of them, not just me. And there's a lot of people that do that.
Sure.
I miss more deals than I get, you know.
Right.
So.
Okay, we've just got a few more minutes, and we actually have someone who's written you a question. So this is pretty, this is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
So landsofamerica.com wrote you. And what's the average hold time now you're finding? Is it longer than it used to be, or is it about the same? Because, you know, now we seem to be more in a buyer's market at the moment. And are you still seeing properties moving as quickly as they were 2 and 3 years ago, or is it slowed down a bit, or what's
Well, you'd have to have your head buried in the sand to think that, you know, we weren't in a new market dynamic right here. And I would say the answer to his question, yes. It's not like the red hot times of you know, 2005 when, you know, things were just blowing out the door so fast.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, I can say that I closed personally on two land transactions the day before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got one more that I'm trying to get closed up here in the next week or so before Christmas. And we auctioned off a few of our Westlope properties, and they sold at the auction. So, I mean, that's five pieces of
typical acreage was like between like 30 and 80 acres, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly, between 30 and 80 acres.
So you had a number of transactions go through, even though, you know, the media seems to report that, you know, the real estate has just kind of slid down the tubes. Actually, when it comes to land, there still is a decent amount of activity going on. Wouldn't you agree?
I think if you have a piece of land priced right, there is a decent amount of activity. There is a demand for it.
Right.
If you want to throw a piece of property out there at an exorbitant price, you could sit there for years and not sell.
Right.
And I think it comes down to price. You know, you've got to have the right price point. And if you have the right price point, then there are still plenty of buyers out there for it.
Yes, I agree. Well, that's a great question from Lands of America, so we do appreciate them contributing. And lastly, what's the typical age of a current land buyer? When you're taking that piece and going through the entitlement and improvement phases, who's buying?
Well, you know, just looking at the demographics of the five that I'm just involved in right now, we have a middle-aged, I say middle-aged, probably 50-year-old couple from Alaska that just bought a 43-acre piece of property from me. I've got a guy from Tennessee who actually grew up here in the valley wanting to come back, and he's under 30, who bought an 80-acre piece of property from me.
Okay.
And then an investor who's probably 60-something that you know, bought some of our properties out of the auction. So I would say, Russell, that there's a pretty broad cross-section right now.
Okay.
And I don't think that there's necessarily the case that, you know, all the young Americans are moving to the city, because I know plenty of young people who are still interested in, you know, living the American dream on their own 5-acre piece of property, you know, and raising their kids in a country environment. That's what I've done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, it's a great way to raise a family out in the country, and there's still people who want that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely. So now you were telling me a story about someone came to your neck of the woods, and they were from Alaska.
Yeah, that was a couple that bought the 43 acres. Did I not say Alaska?
And they were from, and what age bracket were they?
They're probably early 50s, and I think that their intent was, I think that they're probably just tired of the cold of Alaska, and they wanted to come down to the warmer climes of southern Oregon, where you have the similar type you know, beauty that you get in Alaska without having to deal with the cold climate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have a lot of people coming from California up here, too, that are just
Well, what's interesting, and just kind of like, you know, Florida, of course, everybody, you know, a lot of people have moving to Florida. I mean, we're having, you know, like 800 people a day are moving into Florida still. I mean, it's just ridiculous how many people. But a lot of people are moving to Oregon.
Yeah.
And you've documented how they're moving from Alaska, from Tennessee, from California. So Alaska, Oregon is actually a kind of a destination state as well.
It is.
And there's a lot of land there that that people can enjoy at the same time.
Absolutely. So, and I've made a career out of capitalizing on that demand. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Amen, brother.
So, okay.
Get what you're saying here. Okay. So we've had a lot of great information, and I've asked now for Mark to comment a little bit about what he's doing now, because he has an exciting client now with West Slope, S-L-O-P-E, Properties. And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, okay. Where to start? In 2000...
Well, you have 5 minutes, so how
about that? I got 5 minutes. Okay. In 2006... Boise Cascade Corporation, which was one of the larger landholders in our country, sold off all of their land in one transaction, and it comprised 2 million acres of property, and it was a $1.6 billion transaction in one day.
Now, this is 2 million acres in multiple states.
Multiple states, yes.
Okay.
All
okay.
over the country.
Okay.
And when that happened, it became
it was timberland, correct?
Mostly timberland, yes.
Okay, all right.
Mm-hmm. And when that happened, it became pretty clear that some of the land that got transferred over to these new owners, who is a real estate investment trust, it became pretty clear that some of that land has what we call HBU value. And HBU is short for higher and better use. And what that means is that it may not be equitable to just leave it as timberland into perpetuity. It probably would be better if it were converted to something else. And what that conversion is it could be recreation land, it could be a home site, it could be hunting land, it could be a destination resort, a myriad of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So they formed a team of real estate professionals to go out and in the different areas and to make those decisions and determinations what HBU properties were there, and then to
okay.
go ahead and convert them.
Okay.
And so I've been hired by this company here in Southern Oregon. We have 140,000 acres in our county.
Wow.
And I've been hired by them to go out amongst that 140,000 acre inventory and identify which properties have HBU value, and then.
Okay.
And then I've been empowered to go ahead and make those decisions and make those improvements and entitlements to the property to convert them. And
okay.
it's very exciting because this is the first time since in the history of our country, since the land patent days, that many of these properties have been on the market for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is all virgin territory, and it's a great opportunity for somebody who wants to buy property to come get something that has never been available for sale before. And,
sure.
And,
sure.
You know, a lot of people say, well, the good land's been bought up. Well, that's not true. I mean, this is the first time this has been on the market ever. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm right in the middle of doing that for them right now, and it's a great opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can hear the excitement and enthusiasm in Mark's voice because this is something that he really enjoys, very passionate about, and has a lot of fun with at the same time. You know, it's like
absolutely,
it's like kid in a candy store or something like that.
Yeah, I can't believe I get paid to do it.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
But I think you know the key point with the overall theme of our discussions tonight is really that land. If we can compare it to like rehabbing a house or any commercial property, you actually spend a lot less time and energy in a land project than you might would if you're going to build an apartment complex or fix a house. Would I be correct?
Oh, absolutely. The beautiful thing about land is that it's a lot more simple. There's just not that much more to get involved in or be concerned about or
mm-hmm.
to know about. You know, I'm a licensed general contractor too, and
mm-hmm.
you know there's a lot of extra liability that a person takes on when they start adding buildings to property because there's a whole new area of regulation and money and expense and the knowledge
sure.
that you have to have, et cetera, and
sure.
none of that in vacant land it comes into play. Now you
yeah.
need to have a thorough understanding of the vacant land business.
Sure,
but that is comparatively easy to learn.
Right.
Than,
absolutely.
You know, than the bigger picture.
It's
bigger
less
picture of
complex. It is. It's doable, but it's certainly less complex than the other forms of real estate that we've just been talking about.
Exactly. And so. Since I've done both, you know, I've been a builder and I've built houses and apartments and all that stuff. And
mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, land is a lot more fun and it's a lot easier to do because you don't have to have that knowledge and experience and liability that you get with buildings.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. What kind of contact information do you want to leave with our listeners?
Well, I would say if anybody has any further questions, they're free to go to our website, which is www.westslopeproperties.com.
Okay.
Or, if they want to contact me directly at the office, I can be reached at 541-494-4400, extension 30.
Okay. And would it be all right if I gave out your email address?
Absolutely.
Okay. It's markskill, S-K-I-L-L, at msn.com. And also, Mark is going to, I put out a monthly email newsletter, and Mark is the contributor. He's going to talk about how to become a land pro, right?
That's right, yeah.
You know? And so you'll get to receive, so make sure that you're signed up for that newsletter because it's just a great wealth of information. And so I've actually had a lot of fun talking with you tonight.
It's been great, yeah. This is something that I'm very passionate about, and it's easy. Easy for me to talk about.
Absolutely, and so I know that there's a lot of people listening in that they've enjoyed, and then people will be listening that's archived, and they can listen to it at their convenience. So I wouldn't be surprised if you get a few people contact you down the road after they've heard this broadcast. So,
I'd welcome that opportunity. Yeah.
Very nice. Thank you for taking time out of your day. I'm in Florida, so we're about to go to bed, and Mark's going to take his family out for dinner, is what
that's
he's
right.
going to do. You know, so that's
yep.
a different time zone thing. So, again, it was a pleasure having you. I'm going to continue on with a few other comments, so I'm going to bid you adieu.
Okay.
And I hope that we'll talk again soon.
Nice talking to you, Russell.
Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Coming. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Bye now.
Bye.
Okay. So, I hope that you've enjoyed that time with Mark Stillman that we were able to talk together on the online here. I'm just going to do some further comments here if you'd like to listen in for a few more minutes. And what I wanted to kind of talk about is just kind of change tracks for a moment because Mark has just given us some great information. But for me, when I think about a rural area of our country, I just kind of stop for a moment and think about that beauty and serenity that I experience when I'm away from that, from my house, and maybe I'm on vacation. And oftentimes that I spent time in the mountains of North Carolina growing up as a kid, and I have so many fond memories of going back to that destination time and time again. There's unique smells, there's unique taste, there's unique, it's just a beautiful sight. And that, I think it also gives you an image of why so many people are either buying land or rural land or moving to rural destinations. It's just that it captures something in time for us. And especially there's many folks that are nearing retirement age. And as Mark talked about, he's seen a number of people who are buying land in his area. And I'm experienced this in the southeast where I'm at, that they're well over 50 and they're looking for something to retire on. In fact, we're finding that there's millions and millions and millions hope to relocate to rural areas in the next few years. And maybe you're one of them. So I just wanted to go back to one of my previous broadcasts. On October 28th, the focal point of my broadcast at that point was to talk about what the media is saying about land. And I have a quote here from Investors Business Daily where it says, "Becoming a land baron was once considered the domain of billionaires. But land has gotten more affordable for the smaller players to invest in as prices have dropped in tandem with the housing market." And what's interesting is that they are talking about in this article is that our investors are finding deep discount deals, kind of like what Mark is talking about. But what they really highlighted, there's a really attractive market emerging for the small investor. And there is a market that is emerging that is growing. And it's growing in leaps and bounds for the smaller investor. And it's time for you and I to become more a part of that. Mark has been a part of 200 land deals, and I've been a part of 600 land deals. Yet we hardly have any competitors in what we're doing. And the problem is that there's more demand out there than Mark and I can handle, and we need others to get on board with us. In fact, it is my opinion that land is the most lucrative market in all of real estate. It is hands down, in my opinion, the most lucrative market in all of real estate where we're sitting right now. And so with my interview with Mark, he continues to validate my primary point. There is significant demand for land anywhere in the country. And this is where my turnkey program, Vacant Land Guide, comes into play. I am the only real estate trainer talking about rural land and how to control or buy properties at 50% or more off market price. In fact, Mark was talking about how he was able to resell that property well over $200,000, and he bought it for $15,000. I've had that happen to me time and time again. Now, for some of you, this is your first broadcast. So let me briefly review some critical points about land that I'd like you to take home with you in the United States. Are you aware that there are 1.6 billion acres? Yes, that's billions with a huge B that can be bought and sold in the United States. Let me repeat that. There is 1.6 billion acres that can be bought and sold in the United States today. That's an enormous amount. Now, let's put that into perspective. If I look at my particular county, I'm in northeast Florida. I'm in the Jacksonville area. The county just south of me is Clay County. It is 800 square miles, excuse me, and it's 500,000 acres. And so one thing that we have lost perspective, that one square mile is actually 640 acres. And oftentimes that can be 640 land deals in some of these rural areas where I live. But each county has an enormous amount of acreage. And Mark documented his county had 140,000 acres that went up that could potentially go on the market. And so that's pretty typical. And what most of us do as investors, we glaze over all these land opportunities that are virtually in our back door. I have done many, many deals. In fact, I've done most of my deals within a two-hour driving distance where I've lived, and that's over 600. And there's many, many, many more that I'm going to be doing. Now, according to the USDA, 97% of the land is actually designated as rural land, and my program is dedicated to the raw or the rural land market. And did you know that 3% of the population actually lives on, I'm sorry, that 80% of our population actually lives on 3% of the urban land? So that means 240 million people live on 3% of the land in the United States. Isn't that astounding? And so that 97% of the land is actually designated by the USDA as rural land, yet most of us live far away from those rural destinations. So I break down land into three major categories. And this, if you were taking a note or two, this would be a good time to jot down a note that I pursue. There's three categories: the small parcel land, kind of what Mark and I were talking about, that's 20 acres or under. And then there's developing land. That's land that's transitioning from rural to urban settings. Those are kind of the pieces of land that are very near the city limits and that eventually be converted into a high-rise apartment complex or a rural subdivision of some sort. And there's rural or undeveloped land as the third major category. And usually that's a half-hour, hour drive outside the city center. What I pursue and what Mark pursues are the small parcel land and the raw or undeveloped land. And so some of those subcategories, as Mark mentioned, people are buying land for hunting, for farmland, for hobby farms. They're buying it for conservationist purposes. He's representing West Slope Properties. They're doing timberland. And then there's people that want bought a waterfront land. There's retirement destination land. There are so many subcategories that people are buying land in, and they're all in demand all at the same time. And so in my November 11th broadcast, and so these are some of these previous broadcasts that are archived on blogtalkradio.com. So if you type in Russell Ward, W-A-R-D, you'll find these other broadcasts. And I talk about the baby boomers. And listen to that, because this particular group is really driving the demand for land. And even though, and so land prices are very good right now, but they were going to continue to move in an upward direction because of supply and demand. So I've talked about, we've had the great interview with Mark. I've talked about in previous broadcasts about how the media is representing land and saying so many positive things about it. I've talked in a previous broadcast about how the baby boomers in the next few years are going to escalate the demand for land. So this leads me to my point about my program. Why did I design the Vacant Land Guide? Now, my primary motivation is to help others achieve their dreams and goals. I became a land investor. I saw an opportunity. Now I'm taking that information that I've learned and I'm sharing it with others. But when I started, it was like many. I started being a part of land deals when I had a full-time job. And I spent my evening and weekends pursuing opportunities where eventually, after about 1 year's time, I was able to throw away my full-time job and take my part-time income I was making from land. And I did so well. In my first year, I did over a six-figure income in profits from land that I became a full-time land investor. But what I saw was that there was hardly anybody doing that. And so I looked into the marketplace, and I decided to develop a manual called the Vacant Land Guide. And it has evolved to be the most comprehensive manual on vacant land ever. In fact, it's all the insider information that Mark and I talked about on this untapped opportunity. That's why I asked Mark to kind of define some of the terms like entitlements, improvements. Those words are a very natural part of who we are and how we talk. But those are the types of things that I write about in the manual to help you understand. So I designed this turnkey home study course so an investor can successfully work land deals 10 to 15 hours a week while working their job, full-time job. I have now 600 land transactions under my belt, and I'm going to give you some of the shortcuts that I've learned, and I'm just going to be passing them on to you. The key one that I'm going to pass on to you is I know how to quickly profile landowners who are willing to sell to you at a low price, just like what Mark was talking about. In fact, my techniques are a little bit more advanced than what Mark's doing. I do more than just the direct mail option, and I go into detail about that in my Vacant Land Guide. So I actually avoid the direct marketing route that Mark espouses to, even though I understand that it works for him. Now, the second major point in the manual is how to communicate to landowners and convince them to sell to you below market value. I've been a part of hundreds of deals, and I've bought most of them at 50 to 70 cents on the dollar. I've bought them significantly below market value. And I also talk about how to write a no-money-down contract that is very easy to do. But I, too, have purchased real estate training manuals. And when I get it home, I've taken some of these home, and I find out, I kind of say, I'm not sure where to start. And so I've intentionally created a step-by-step checklist, a roadmap, if you will, how to use the manual quickly and efficiently to get out of the gate as quickly as possible. So it's not a manual where you open it up and start to read chapter one. I have this checklist that says you do this activity first, now read this chapter, then do this activity, and then read this chapter, and you can hit the road running very, very quickly. And I want you to be successful. And guess what? I have too many opportunities, and I need your help. There are too many investors in the crowded housing market, and not enough land investors to meet the current demand. Now, who is this home study program ideally suited for? it's suited for someone, an investor who is looking for a stay-at-home business. Because I find, and Mark might be surprised to hear this, that most of my deals now I don't even look at anymore. I use other professionals in my network to be my eyes and ears for property around me. So rarely do I leave my home to make my profits in land. You will easily make $5,000 to $10,000 a month if you're pursuing small parcel opportunities. And if you're going after the larger deals, 20 acres or more, there's opportunities to make $50,000 to $100,000 on each deal, working part-time. And, you know, Mark's goal was to do one deal per month. And I do more than, oftentimes I will do more than that, and because there are so many opportunities out there. But there's going to be people who are listening tonight that you want to buy property for yourself, and you want to learn how to go behind the scenes of the MLS and find landowners who are willing to sell at a low price. That's your an ideal candidate for this program. So, but there's really surprisingly little investment to get into a land business and become a land investor, which is really, that is a good plus for you. The manual is very affordable, and in no time you'll be ready to hit the road running doing your own land deals. Now, when you become a land investor, you will have that competitive edge that you're looking for in real estate. Stop being a part of the crowded housing market and look to land to meet you and your family's needs. Now I've talked how the media is singing the praises of land, and it's time for you to be a part of it. And the only way for you to be a part of where real estate is hot is to own the Vacant Land Guide. I come to offer you hope as you look at real estate to fulfill your dreams of having a better life. You know you're capable of being successful in real estate, but if you've not found your promised land until now, owning this state-of-the-art program without a doubt will change your life. Owning the Vacant Land Guide is like owning McDonald's franchise. There's a reason for so many successful McDonald's. In fact, when's the last time you've seen a McDonald's actually close? Investors realize that franchises work. And McDonald's is the quintessential franchise. But most small businesses fail because they don't have an organized set of tools to run their business. That's what I provide for you. I've taken these tools and I've proven time and time again, no matter what the market conditions, that they work. My turnkey system is not about foreclosures or buying distressed properties, but doing land deals, and it works. It's time for you to look into another form of real estate. Doesn't it make sense to get in a form of real estate where there is less competition? So here's the tools, the skill set, and my experience. 600 land deals and 1,000 hours poured into these manuals. All the shortcuts and insider information that you'll ever need on land. McDonald's is passionate about your success, and I am too. If you were to go on my website and own this one-of-a-kind manual, it would cost you $1,495. There is thousands and thousands of dollars of information that you'll find nowhere else. In fact, if you went to a big box retail bookstore, you would find not one book on land. That is how valuable owning this turnkey program is. You will be successful if you commit 10 to 15 hours a week. I have created this state-of-the-art manual for those who work full-time and are looking to get into real estate part-time and grow it into a full-time income and change their lives from that J-O-B, that 9-to-5 job, and get into where some real money is in land. Now, you can own the state-of-the-art manual, which is based on current market conditions, for only $995. Owning the Vacant Land Guide will reinvigorate your real estate goals and dreams. So when you decide to own the Vacant Land Guide tonight, I throw in 6 bonuses absolutely free. The first bonus is I throw in a 85-page workbook, a $499 value of case studies, articles, checklists, all related to land, all great information to get you ready to go. I've also included, as the second bonus, a CD-ROM of forms, documents, and contracts related to land. You will not find this anywhere on the planet. That is a $299 value. And the third bonus is I include a list of the best land sites, land websites on the internet and their web addresses. All the information you will ever need on the latest information about land on the internet. It's an invaluable resource, and it'll help you quickly to get connected with all the movers and shakers in land in the United States. I'm also going to throw in as another bonus a free lifetime subscription to Vacant Land Guide News, which is eventually we're going to make that only a subscription rate. But if you buy the Vacant Land Guide, you will have a free lifetime subscription to Vacant Land Guide News, where I analyze the direction and trends of vacant land across the nation. Eventually, this will become a staple for land investors around the country. And also, as another bonus, if you purchase the Vacant Land Guide, I give you a coupon worth $995. And what this is, if you find a land deal that has a tremendous upside to it, and you'd like my company to join you in that particular land deal, and we close on it together, we'll happily refund you that $995. So you have an opportunity to get the manual for free. As a sixth bonus, I will give you any updates absolutely free for the manual. Again, I'm going to continue to make the manual based on current market conditions. As market conditions change and adjust, I will actually email you free updates that will go in the manual to keep you abreast of any changes in the marketplace. Now, you would pay thousands and thousands of dollars if you could even compile this information on your own. It would be virtually impossible for you to do that. But for $995, you get the one-of-a-kind manual and the six bonuses, including a coupon, that will eventually you'll receive the program absolutely free. I give you over $1,200 worth of bonuses absolutely free. So, if you wish to order, please contact me through my website at www.vacantlandguide.com, or you can call me on our toll-free number, 877-8-VACANT. That's 877-882-2268. Be a part of the growing group of investors like Mark Skillman and I who have had their lives changed because of vacant land. Don't put off the decision any longer. Join the ranks of those who know vacant land and make your dreams and goals come true. Now, in future broadcasts, I'll be interviewing other professionals as well to see what's happening at different places around the country. So we'll be talking in the themes in the future, the demand for land, who is buying land, why they are buying land, and again, those interviews with other land investors and with other land professionals from around the country. It was so exciting for Mark to be on the broadcast tonight, and I'm so excited that you were a part as well. So I look forward to hearing from you. Please email me or call me if you have any other thoughts or questions during this broadcast. Owning the Vacant Land Guide will literally change your life. Thanks for listening.